Hello, everybody. This is your coach, Lee Milt here, and today we're going to be focusing on the topic of more personal freedom by releasing clutter. We have a celebrity expert this month that I truly admire. I have worked with on stage. I have all of her books, and I've interviewed her before for my coaching programs. It's the one and only Barbara Hemphill. Now, if you're not familiar with Barbara, you're in for a super treat. She is frequently referred to as the Paper Tiger Lady, and she is the author of a number of books, including Taming the Paper Tiger at Work, Love It or Lose It, Living Clutter-Free Forever, Organizing Paper in Home, What to Toss and How to Find the Rest. But she has a brand new book, and it's called Less Clutter, More Life. Now, Barbara is an amazing woman. She is a true success story when we think of entrepreneurs and business owners. And she's someone who took a risk, went after her passion. She started her business in 1978 with just a $7 ad in a New York City newspaper. Now, for 20 years, she focused on organizing paper and physical clutter. And then the internet happened, and she began to apply her principles for digital clutter. And in recent years, she has concluded that the true clutter that prevents people from accomplishing their work and enjoying their life is emotional and spiritual. Now, she is the founder of the Productive Environment Institute, and her goal is to offer attractive career opportunities to individuals who have a passion for productivity and being an entrepreneur. And her company provides training to become a certified productive environment specialist. And they specialize in providing customized services, strategies, and systems for both individuals and organizations to enable their clients to accomplish their work and enjoy their life more, because they can actually find something. And their ultimate aim is to help people increase profit, productivity, and peace of mind, which is, of course, one of my favorite things to do in life. So everybody, help me welcome Barbara Hemphill. Welcome, Barbara.
Oh, thank you, Lee. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I am delighted to link up with you again because, I mean, we've been on stage together. I have interviewed you a number of times. Your books are like little Bibles in my office, and your name is frequently mentioned of when I say to everybody, well, Barbara Hemphill says this about that. So, I got your new book, and at the time I invested in your book, I really needed some inspiration to release a lot of stuff before I moved to my new house, so the new house wouldn't be cluttered. And I love the fact that your book is so beautiful. There's artwork, there's photography, and it not only inspired me, but it actually gave me the motivation in a very easy and short read format. And so just to give you a little backstory here, because, you know, we're dealing with so much clutter moving, both my husband and I lost our parents in the last few years, and then we inherited all the stuff that doesn't fit in our environment or our taste. But it was so hard to let this stuff go because they're sentimental, and it really was the cause of our last home being cluttered with china and silver furniture, photography that clearly our parents loved but wasn't our taste. And what your book did for me, Barbara, was sincerely remind me to take back my power and to create my own life and environment to suit me. So my office staff and I have done some office cleaning that made us all feel lighter coming to our office every day. And so I'm sure our audience today wants to have more freedom. So my real first question to you is, what prompted you to write Less Clutter, More Life, the book?
Well, Lee, this was one of the things that was on my bucket list of things that I wanted to accomplish before I died. In 37 years, I have developed about 20 timeless principles, starting with clutter is postponed decisions and ending with together we are better, which will be just as true 200 years from now as they are right now. And I was talking with my friend Louise Wanier, who's the illustrator in the book. She has the beautiful photographs. And I said to her, you know, I want to put these principles in a book that will be here when I'm gone as my legacy. But what's important is that this is not a how-to book, but a why-to book. And it's got to touch people's emotions, and that means it needs to have artwork. And she said, tell me about the book. And I said, well, it's 6 inches square. It's less than a half inch thick. You could read the whole thing in an hour. It's got more white space than words. And she said, well, look at the cover of the book. What do you see? You know, what do you feel? And I said, well, peace. And she said, oh, okay, well, open up the book. Now what do you see? And I said, well, hope. And she said, open the next page. What do you see? I said, energy. And she said, well, why don't you just fly out to my studio in Pasadena and let's write it? And that was in, and you'll love this because it's so how God works in terms of getting us where we need to be. I said, that was in June of last year. So I said, what's your calendar look like in July? And she gave me 3 days, and I looked at my calendar, and it was the only 3 days I could go. And the most amazing thing was that one of my consultants was going to be in Raleigh, and I needed to take her to the airport the day before. So I went to the airport, she went to Pennsylvania, I went to California, and this book was born. And I'm just so excited about it because I wanted this really to be my legacy. But perhaps more importantly, there's a lot of talk about clutter. In fact, I read that on January 1st this year, on the Google search engines under how to declutter was number 14.
I believe that.
But most of the talk about clutter is related to personal clutter, like you were talking about just now, and a big part of it is what we inherit from our parents. I mean, that's a huge piece of it, and that's addressed in the book. But what I am passionate about, and especially for the people listening to this, is business clutter. Business clutter is costing this country billions of dollars every year. I see it everywhere, and nobody's talking about that. And we think, people, when they look at what we do, they think it's just about getting rid of paper and digital. Well, the paper and the digital is actually the symptom of the real problem. And the real problem is two things. Number one, I said it was had to do with spiritual clutter. Well, when you talk about spiritual clutter in business, it's about what business are you in? Who have you been put on earth to serve? You cannot be all things to all people in a business and be profitable. And if you're not clear about who you're serving, then you're going to end up with lots of clutter. And the other thing, it has to do with systems. And I'll give you an example that just happened in our family recently. My husband went to the doctor, and he was prescribed this medication. And it's $265 a bottle. Now, we have insurance, so it wasn't money out of our pocket. But the doctor wrote a prescription for 3 months' worth. So there's three bottles at $265 a bottle. My husband took it for 2 weeks, and he had a side effect, and the doctor said, quit taking it. We now have 2.5 bottles of medication, which I have to dispose of, which is not easy. That's clutter. I mean, prescriptions that are expired, that are not used is clutter, because how do you get rid of them safely? But more importantly, somebody's paying for that, and you know who it is. It's us as taxpayers, ultimately.
Yes.
And that is a symptom. That's a systems clutter. That's not having systems in place. It does not make any sense at all to prescribe 3 months of medicine to somebody until you find out whether it's going to work. Or yesterday I went into to an office, and it took two people in the office 10 minutes to find something that they needed to give to me because they didn't have the systems in place. And that's what I'm passionate about. And I love talking to entrepreneurs because we can change the world this way, and that's what we want to do.
All right. So let's, just to be clear, define clutter for us, particularly in the business office.
Well, there's a very simple way, I think, to answer clutter. And that is, does this, and then you can fill in this to be this idea, this thought, this item, this email, this whatever, help me accomplish my work or enjoy my life? Part of the reason we became entrepreneurs was because we wanted to have control over our lives. And when we keep too much stuff, we end up losing control. So one of the things that we do in our company is we promote, we have in our clients' offices something we call productive environment parties. And they're literally events where people come to work in the morning and we feed them bagels and coffee. And while they're having their bagels and coffee, doing a seminar called Sometimes It Takes an Expert to Take Out the Trash. And we explain to them this concept of going through your office as fast as you can, picking up items and saying, does this help me accomplish my work or enjoy my life? And if the answer is no, it is clutter. And then we help them get rid of it by putting in shredding stations, recycling stations, trash to treasure stations. We did that 2 weeks ago with a nonprofit organization with 24 employees. And in 6 hours, we shredded 3.5 tons of paper.
Oh, my word. 3.5 tons?
3.5 tons.
Do you have a big tractor trailer truck out back, Barbara?
We did. We literally did. We had a shredding truck. That's literally what we did. We had a shredding truck sitting out there. And one of the things we did was we make it an employee perk, because in our personal lives, one of the big stumbling blocks to getting rid of paper is the security issues. So we invited employees on that day to bring papers from home that they wanted to shred, and so they got that at no cost. And it was a perk that they got from the employer, which I thought was really cool.
Very nice, a very nice a perk. So let's say my office, for instance, I don't think there'll be that much, but are there places you can go that literally will take this stuff and shred it for you?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, there are plenty of ways to do that. There are some office supply companies, UPS stations, places like the UPS stores will have shredding events. They pay, you pay by the box, or there are lots of ways. So if you just went into Google and did a search on shredding, you would find places that would take those things.
Excellent. So let me just continue this story. So after these people got rid of all this stuff, did they psychologically feel different?
Well, and let me tell you the rest of the story. What we do when we do these productive environment parties is usually in the morning we do physical. And by the way, we say to management, you know, this is not a risk day. The philosophy for this day is if in doubt, keep it. So we're not risking anything whatsoever. But what we're doing with the employees is we're giving them a form so that if they find something in their office that they don't want, but they don't know what to do with, they just note that down. And then we collect all that information. Then we go back to management and we can say, okay, here's some issues as it relates to retention guidelines, or how do we get rid of this? And this has to do, one of the things we address a lot is what we call the 7 information management questions, and this helps us address that. So we do the paper in the morning, and then we get together and have lunch because we want people to tell stories about what they're doing. And then in the afternoon, we switch and have them clean out their computers. And we take those principles that we used in the morning and said, okay, how do we apply this to email and digital files? And then we send them back to their computers. We did a company with 400 employees. We ended up doing 12 days. So each employee participated once. There were 12 departments, so we did 12 different days. At the end of the 12 days, we had shredded 33,000 pounds of paper and deleted almost 1/2 of the files on their server.
Amazing.
And to answer your question, yes, the stories, what people say, what always happens, it's never failed. I've done this scores of times. And what always happens is people say, I'm going home to throw, I'm going home and clean out my garage, or I'm going to go home and clean out my attic or whatever. And partly, in fact, my favorite page in the new book, Less Clutter, More Life, is a page that shows a big boulder and it says, what stops us? What prevents us from getting rid of paper? And there's a list. It says, I never have enough time. I have too much to do. I have better things to do. Organizing is boring. It's too difficult. It never lasts. It's never good enough. I often overthink the situation. I didn't create it. I have no idea what is there. I'm easily distracted and go off on tangents. I get stuck in the memories of the past. It's too emotionally draining. I want to be responsible and respectful of things I've been given. I have to take care of other people and other things in my life first. It's hard to admit I have an issue. I'm afraid to let something go. I might want it back. And
well, this last...
we talk about that, and that's what employees tell us. It's like, oh, I'm afraid. All those things, those are all the reasons. And so when management empowers them, educates them first, and empowers them, they're so free. And I did it in a library in Kansas City a few weeks ago, and one of the employees went and wrote up on the whiteboard, I'm so happy to have time to do this. I've been wanting to do it for months, and look, I didn't even know I had this stuff.
I think of all the reasons that you listed, my view of most offices, and probably my own also, is people are afraid to get rid of things that they would get in trouble for getting rid of.
That's exactly right. And that's why I said that it is vitally important that management be involved. In fact, I turned down a couple of years ago a $250,000 contract with a large company because they were moving. They had six buildings and they were downsizing to two buildings, and they estimated that they had 50 million paper documents in those six buildings that they had to get rid of before they moved. And they asked me to help them do it, and I did. I came up with the plan. But part of the plan was that we had these days, and I did the first day as a pilot, and management didn't participate. And it's like, you can't do it that way. Management has to be a role model for employees, and it takes both together. As a manager, as an entrepreneur, you have to decide what the philosophy about information is for your company. And then employees have to know what to keep, because I, as a business owner, I don't know what my employees need to do their job because I don't do their job. I couldn't go clean out their files because as soon as I threw out something, they'd say, well, don't you know I need this to do the report or whatever. So it really does take both management and staff together. And when they work together, it is amazing. And if you just simply do one of those events once a year, it will stop the problem.
What is your view on scanning things versus holding them as a, you know, a physical object in your files?
Great question. One of the things that we focus on is what we call the seven information management questions. And these seven questions, every company, every business needs to answer, and for that matter, every family needs to answer. And those questions are, number one is, what do we need to keep? You know, what business am I in? What kind of life? It's not a moral issue. I mean, one of the things I use is what I call the cost factor. You can keep everything you want if you're willing to pay the price. And the price is time, space, money, and energy. So my job is not to say, oh, Lee, you don't need that. My job is to say, Lee, if you choose to keep this, this is what it's going to cost you in time, space, money, and energy. And is that a price you're willing to pay? So it's, what information do you need to keep? Second is, in what form, paper or electronic? And if it's electronic, what program? Because there are lots of different programs you keep it in. Three is, for how long? That's record retention. Four is, who's responsible for filing it? That's teamwork and job description. Five is, who needs access to it? That's securities and permission. Six is, how do we find it, which is naming conventions and version control. And the seventh one is, how is it backed up? So every organization needs to address those. So the issue is paper versus electronic. You can argue that either way. One of the principles in the book is, you can have anything you want, but not everything. There are pros and cons to each one. My license plate says less paper. I do not believe in 99% of the cases that paperless is possible, but less paper is possible and desirable and cost effective. And I think a big difference is reference papers, papers that you need to keep for legal reasons or papers that you might need in the future, those should be digitally done. But the papers that you use on a daily basis, depending upon your situation, may be better in paper. And sometimes you actually end up using paper and electronic. So you may be more comfortable, easier to do your work with paper, but you need to keep the electronic in case you need to share it with someone else or you need to recreate it. So it all goes back to the four words that started this business 37 years ago. Clutter is postponed decisions. It's about making a decision about which is the best way. And more importantly, it's not just making the decision, it's executing the decision and then sustaining that decision on a regular basis.
So what are the stumbling blocks to an eliminating clutter, not only physically but mentally?
Well, that list that I just read you is the answer to that. But I think the bottom line, well, there are probably two of them that really stand out. One is fear. Fear that you're going to make a mistake, fear that you're going to offend somebody, fear that somebody's going to want it again. And then the other one is just time. I mean, I did a seminar for 40 people in Maryland last weekend, and everybody just says, you know I need to do this, but I just don't have time. Well, there's an old saying, pay me now or pay me later. That's the way it is with organizations. I mean,
that's so true.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, and research shows, I mean, there's lots of statistics. The one that's very common and that I think is actually quite conservative is that the average person spends 150 hours a year looking for something. Well, I was in the office yesterday, two people spent 10 minutes, just me. I mean, just one person, two people, 10 minutes. Well, that means there was 20 minutes being spent. First of all, it made a very bad impression, right? I mean, this office is so disorganized. They can't really serve me because they're not doing what they would be better off having a conversation with me, showing me some other product or service that they have to offer, but instead they were looking for something. So when somebody's disorganized, it means that they're not doing what is really important in business to do. So you're going to pay one time or the other, so you might as well do it now. Now, a big part of that is people, when they try to solve this problem, all start in the wrong place. They try to clean up the backlog first, and that is absolutely backwards. When we go into work with people, one of our most popular services is called the 8-Hour Miracle, and it's an organizing intervention for one person in one office. And when we go in to do that, we ignore everything they did in the past because, and this has been proven over and over, and I'm sure you saw it, Lee, as you were moving the things out of your house, 80% of what we keep, we never use.
Oh, my gosh. And we don't even often know why we have it or, you know, why is this even here?
That's right. That's exactly right. And so when we start to work with somebody, with a company, we don't care what they did in the past. It doesn't really matter. I mean, in this day and age, just like we talked about at the beginning of the call, the time just flies so fast. It used to be, when I started in business, and it was true for you too, we used to go back and analyze what we had done 2 and 3 years before. It doesn't make any difference what we did 2 or 3 years before because everything has changed. Now it's only
right.
A matter of what do we need to do going forward. So one of the principles in Less Clutter, More Life is, today's mail is tomorrow's pile. So when we go in to work with individuals or businesses on systems, we're not going to pay any attention to what you did in the past. It doesn't really matter. We're going to say, what do you need to do in order to accomplish your work going forward? And in order to answer that question, we have to start with the most important question is, what is your vision for this business? If this business is the business you want it to be, what is it going to look like? How many hours a week are you going to work? What kind of profits are you going to have? How many employees do you want? What kind of people do you want to work with? How are you going to change the world? And if you don't know that, then you're going to have a hard time. And that actually was, you asked me at the beginning, why did I write the book? One of the things I learned in my own personal life was, my first marriage after 14 years came to an end. And I was devastated. I moved into a new house. I remember calling my mom and saying I could live in this house for the rest of my life. I loved it because it had shell-shaped sinks and it was a It was a corner lot with a big yard, and I said to my mom, I could live here for the rest of my life. I thought I was set, and I could remember being in an airplane flying over St. Louis and looking out and seeing bright blue sky and white fluffy clouds and thinking, this is going to be the best year of my life. And 30 days later, my marriage ended. And I was sitting in a counselor's office, and the counselor said to me, okay, you have a blank slate. What do you want? And I said, I have no idea. I said I was Mrs. Tom. I wanted to be Mrs. Tom. I had three adopted children that I loved, and I had this little organizing business on the side that was making enough money to fill in the gaps because my husband worked for a nonprofit organization. I thought I was set, and suddenly everything was gone. And she made a statement to me, which I have used with my clients all these years since, which is, all right, let's start with what you don't want. And what I find with both individuals and businesses is that many people are not clear about what they want, what they really want. And one of the ways to figure out what that is to start with what you don't want. And it's like peeling the layers of an onion. You keep saying, well, I don't want this. I don't want this. This doesn't help me accomplish my work. This doesn't help me enjoy my life. And you keep peeling and peeling, and eventually you get to the core, which is what you are all about and what you were put on earth to do as an individual or as a business.
That's actually brilliant advice, and I hope everybody listening to take will take that to heart, because I think that we go brain dead sometimes or go into denial about our own needs because we're just so busy, you know, trying to be the rescuers and serving other people. And I just think that most people lose their focus of, you know, why they're here and why they're of service and what they want to do. So that's absolutely brilliant. One of the questions that I have for you is, and this is a big problem, I've experienced this myself, is what do you do when the clutter belongs to someone else? I live with a very wonderful man, and I love him more than anything. And, you know, we have different views of what's clutter sometimes.
Well, that's one of my most commonly asked questions. I think it comes up in every presentation that I ever give. And I understand it intimately because I am married to someone. He's actually a retired officer in the Army, and one assumes that somebody like that would be an organized person. Wrong.
Well,
this is a guy who... I mean, you know, he could step over five pairs of shoes and never see them. I mean, he can sit with piles of clutter all around him, and he doesn't care to learn because he says jokingly, well, that's what I married you for. And it's really true. And when we were first married, we've been married 28 years now, and we were first married, I thought this reflected on me, and I was really worried about it. You know, it's like, oh, my gosh, this, I mean, if I can't even fix my husband, how can I have a consultant? You know, how can I be a consultant?
Exactly.
Well, I learned
good
a very
luck with
important
that.
Yeah, exactly. I learned a very important lesson, and that is, and I say this all the time, I am not looking to convince anybody to get organized. I am looking for the people who've always wanted to be but could never figure out how. So in the meantime, how do you live or work? Sometimes it's your boss. Frequently it's your boss, actually. I work a lot with employees, and the boss is the problem, because as entrepreneurs, and let me just say, I am not a naturally organized person. I mean, people think this comes easily to me. Man, I am a prime example of teaching what I need to learn. Now, I work with it. It's not like I go and organize other people's stuff and don't do mine. But I often have people come to my office. I love to have people come to my office because they can see it. When they see visual things, how we do our numerical filing systems and things like that, it's easier. Well, one day I had invited, there was a couple that I'd worked with, an entrepreneurial couple, and they were going to come to my office, and it was on a Saturday afternoon, which I don't usually do, but that was the only day we could work out. And I said, oh, that's no problem, I'll do that, you know, 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon. Well, Saturday morning, my husband had left his glasses at the gym, and he said, oh, I don't want to go to the gym. I said, oh, you know, I have some errands to run. No problem. I'll go pick up your glasses, run my errands. Well, in true ADHD style, I'm out running around and have some more ideas. And so I'm executing these ideas, and all of a sudden my phone rings, and it's my client saying, we're almost at your office. Well, I knew what my office looked like. It wasn't very organized because I'd worked really late that night, and I love to start things and don't like to finish them, and I love the big picture and I don't like details, and my assistant wasn't there that day to pick up anything after me, so it was kind of a mess. I'm thinking, oh, great, this is great. And I thought, no, wait, this is a great teaching point. So they walked in, and I said, okay, look at your watches. And I said, now I want you to, because it looked like a mess. I mean, you might look at it and say, good grief, they pay her for teaching organizing? I said,
I understand that totally.
Yeah, I think most entrepreneurs do, Lee. I really do. That's what makes us entrepreneurs, is because we have those, you know, those ideas. Well, anyway, I said, look at your watch. They did. And I said, now watch what happened. And 27 minutes later, everything had been put away and put away in the right place. So the problem is not the clutter. The clutter happens. Life is complicated. People get sick. Employees don't show up. You have travel schedules, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Clutter happens. The problem is when you don't know what to do with the clutter. And that's where the systems, we use the acronym for systems of saving you space, time, energy, and money. Normally, I don't like acronyms because I think they're so contrived, but I love that one because that's what a system does. Anytime there is something in your life or your business that needs to be repeated, you need a system for it. And when you have a system, it will save you space, time, energy, and money. And so they saw. It's like, oh, look at that. 27 minutes later, everything was put away in the right thing, place, so that she could find it. So let's go back to the clutter belonging to someone else. And again, I'll tell you my own personal story. I came home from work one night. My husband's clutter was all around, and I just wanted to scream. And I heard my mother saying, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And I didn't say anything at all because it wouldn't have been nice. And I walked straight back to my bedroom. And I looked in my own bedroom, and this is the days of audio cassette tapes. Some of them might have been yours, Lee.
I hope so. I hope so, Barbara.
Quite likely. And there was a whole pile of them. There was, you know, a portable cassette player and piles of cassettes by the bed. And there was a rocking chair that probably had 2 days at least clothes on it. And then I looked on the counter, and there was my makeup that I hadn't put away when I got dressed in the morning. So I started cleaning up my own stuff. And a very interesting thing happened. My anger went away. And I realized that part of the reason we struggle so much with other people's stuff is that we're really struggling with our own. And that when we deal with our own, we can deal better with other people. And then the other thing is boundaries. So in our family, and my husband's retired now, so I have no intention of retiring. My mother was working at 82, and I have her genes. I have no intention of retiring. My goal is to give a speech when I'm 100. But my husband's retired, and he absolutely loves it. So he's at home all the time, what he calls twice the husband and half the pay.
That's funny.
And so after he went home, it's like, okay, he spends all of his time here, so it's right that he should have more space. So he does. We have a 4,000-square-foot house, and on every floor there's some stuff that's his. And when you walk through the house, you can very quickly see which is his. But we have some rules. It's like there's a certain amount that he can clutter up, but it can't get over into mine. So it has to do with boundaries. And often, actually, I've had people say, okay, I want to buy Less Clutter, More Life. I want to give it to my husband. I won't sell it to him. I won't sell him to him. Because I said, if you're buying this to convince somebody else to get organized, you might as well take your money and throw it down the garbage disposal.
I'm sad to hear that. I had the very same thought. I'm going to give this to my husband because it's so short and it's got pretty pictures and he'll read this and be convinced.
Well, if he has any interest, I think this is a book that's most likely to trigger it because it is easy to read. You can read it in less than an hour. You know, it really is. So if anybody has any inclination, like I would never have somebody buy, like your husband, I would never say, buy organizing paper at home, what to toss and how to find the rest for your husband. I would say that was just a complete waste. But this one, you know, might potentially be. But it really has to do with your doing your stuff. Why is it so much easier to look at somebody else's stuff? Because you don't have the emotion. The reason we struggle with our own is it's the emotion. And you can look at somebody else's stuff and say, what are you doing that for? You know, one of the things when I wrote Love It or Lose It, Living Clutter-Free Forever, I did a lot of research. And one of the things I discovered that was really life and business changing was that when I worked with someone that found it very difficult to let go of things, if I asked enough questions, without exception, I would find that that person had experienced a severe emotional loss in their life.
Yes.
I think about a gentleman that I was at a trade show. I moved to Raleigh, and there was a guy who was kind of like a groupie. Every time I did a trade show, he'd be showing up there. And one time he said to me, you know, he said, my clutter started at age 54. He said, I lost a job I loved, and I never found another one. And that's a perfect, not one that he liked, and that's a perfect example of clutter accumulates when you're not crystal clear about what you want your life and your work to be like. So when we work with a client, one of the places we start is by saying, okay, describe your life. If you had the life and the business and the work that you wanted, what would it be like? What would it look like? And if they don't know, which unfortunately a lot of times they don't, then it's like, okay, well, let's start with what you don't want. And then we go back to peeling the layers of the onion off again.
Well, I totally understand that. I had a friend one time, and in their early childhood, their parents divorced. And anyway, basically at the tender age of 7 or 9 years old, they lost everything. And from then on, they, like, hoarded, you know, just, you know, they kept everything. They were so afraid to let everything go. And their environment was just, you know, overcrowded and stuffed. I mean, they literally, Barbara, had cards from businesses that had been dead for, you know, 10 years, you know, that
right.
they had worked for, but they kept the calling cards. And so, you know, there's a lot of psychological stuff that goes along that I don't think people sometimes attach to clutter. Also, you know, a lot of people grew up like my grandparents were in the, you know, recession era, depression era. And,
yep.
you know, they kept everything. And both sides of my family had farmers or ranchers. So they had large spaces with big barns. And they were kind of MacGyver, you know, well, let's keep that. We might use that to fix something.
Absolutely.
And
I grew up on a farm in Nebraska, and my dad did that, and my brother and I were just talking about it not too long ago, because all over the farm were these barns with these different pieces of what I would call junk in them. And one of the pieces of advice I give to people, because often people at seminars will say to me, you know, I just can't get rid of this, but I don't want to leave it to my kids. And I say, you know, one of the best gifts you can give your children is to say to them, you know, whatever you do with this is fine. Because one of the things my brother said was, every time I try to clean up these piles around the farm, I feel like I'm dishonoring Daddy. Because he kept it, and if I got rid of it. And so when somebody dies, and you said you talked about dealing with your parents, it's like you're dealing with the grief of losing your parents. And then on top of that, you have to deal with all this stuff, and it's really overwhelming. And one of the things I'm doing in my own life, I turned 68 years old last month, and one of the things I'm doing is going through my house and finding things that I would like other people to have, and instead of putting it in my will, I'm giving it to them now. And it is
Barbara,
giving me,
that's amazing.
It's giving me so much joy. I've written little stories. You know, I'll give it to them, or I'll send it to them, and I'll say, you know, here's the history of this item, and this is why I want you to have it. And the feedback has just been, people are so touched. And I'm thinking, instead of putting this in my will and making my kids have to deal with it, why don't I just give it to them now? I don't need it.
I'm so happy you told that story. This past year for Christmas, I'm good friends with Dan Kennedy, and he is a Disney crazy person. I mean, anything Disney. It's just, and I had worked for Disney for 12 years, and over the years, they gave me a number of gifts, and I kept them all because they came from Disney, but I didn't have the love for Disney that Dan had. So I actually, this past holiday, found, you know, they were gold pens with, you know, Mickey on them, and, you know, they were nice things. And so I gathered them all up, and as part of my gift to him, I wrote him this long story about where each thing came from, you know, where I had spoken for Disney and why, you know, who had given it to me and the books they had given me that were signed by Disney people. And he wrote me the longest, nicest thank you note this year, saying of all the gifts that he got, he really treasured what I had given him, not because it was, not only because it came from Disney, but because it also had me attached to it. So I'm so happy you brought that up, because it didn't occur to me to ever share that with anybody, but I'm going to actually do that. I really appreciate that tip. In fact, if you're listening today, folks, this is probably one of the best tips you're ever going to get. to not only make people feel good and feel appreciated, but also to let go of some of those things you want them to have.
There's a story in Less Clutter, More Life that comes from, I was doing a seminar for a bank, and a woman came up to me and she said, my husband died 10 years ago, and I still have all the stuff in his closet because I just haven't been able to give it away.
Wow.
And we did the seminar, and when it was done, she came up and she said, I just figured out what I'm going to do with all my husband's stuff. And I said, tell me. And she said, I decided that every time I give away something of his, I'm going to give away something of mine at the same time. And I said, you know, that's why I love what I do, because in 37 years, nobody ever came up with that idea, and it is a wonderful idea, because you are getting rid of your clutter, you're getting rid of the stuff from your husband, you're blessing two people, and you're still doing something with your husband, even though he's gone from this earth. I think that is awesome.
That really is awesome. I'm impressed. I think all of us could go through our offices, and even though they're offices, and still give things away. For instance, we're getting ready to retire a number of up-to-date CDs and DVDs. We got rid of all the cassettes a long time ago. But we're retiring them to make room for new products this year. And so we're gathering all these books and educational materials, and we're donating them to battered women's, homes and organizations like that, where they can distribute that information. You know, they can distribute those to needy people who really need it. So I think that there's just a lot of options that entrepreneurs and business people have that are right under their nose to help other people that we don't even think about.
Oh, it's absolutely true. One of the things we do on our productive environment parties is we have, this is in businesses, and we set up what we call a trash to treasure table, or in some cases even a room. And as people are cleaning out their offices and they find something that they don't want, and that the company doesn't necessarily want either. You know, it's the flower vases and the mugs and the notebooks and the tchotchkes and all that kind of stuff. And they can put it in that trash to treasure place. And part of the fun of the day is that employees can go there all day long and take anything they want as long as they take it home with them. And people have so much fun with that. One of the other things we do with the Productive Environment Day party is we give away gift cards for the people who win prizes for finding the funniest thing or the oldest thing or the most unlikely thing or the most unusual thing. So at the end of the day, when we gather together to talk about the day, we have people tell stories about why they should get a prize. So they're getting motivated for cleaning out their clutter that day, and people just love it. I've done scores of those days, and none of them have ever failed, because everybody wins. Management wins, because it's opening up issues that as a company you need to address. Here's a records retention issue we need to address. Here's a systems we need to address. And the employees are thankful that they've been given that, because nobody goes to work and says, oh, I don't have anything better to do today. I think I'm just going to clean out my files. If you do, people look at you like, are you mad? We have this project to do. What are you doing? And, in fact, this very afternoon, I'm going to work with a nonprofit organization. I'm so excited. It's the first company that has ever done this, and I hope it's going to be the first of many. But the executive director mandated at the beginning of the year that the third Wednesday of every month for 2 hours in the afternoon is going to be cleanup time. And everybody's going to do it. Management's going to do it, and everybody's going to do it. Because the problem, part of the problem is you clean it up, and then it comes back again. Well, it comes back again because you're not taking time to clean it up. So she decided to mandate it. So that's part of the systems now, that the third Wednesday of every month will be cleanup day for 2 hours.
I really like that. That's a brilliant suggestion, and I hope everybody's listening today will activate that in their own office, because I forgot the statistics already that you said earlier about how many hours a week we look for things, but it was pretty big. So we only have a little bit of time left, but so let's do a hypothetical business owner here, and the business owner has been in business for, say, 15 years, and their office is just a mess. So where do they begin? What is the first few things that they start to do?
Well, I think most important is that they do something. There are many different ways that you can go about getting the results you want. And one of the things I would say is don't hesitate to ask for help sooner rather than later. And that help may not be very much. We do 30-minute phone discovery sessions with people that we do for free just to say, based on what we're hearing from them, this is how you need to get started. Some people do better if they do the easy stuff first, and then it kind of gets them going, and then they move to the harder stuff. Other people do better with the harder stuff. But I think one of the fastest ways to get a jump start in a company, and even in a household, is to have what I call that productive environment party. So you set aside a day and say, okay, today we're simply going to go through the office or go through our house as fast as we can. We're not going to get stuck. If we hung up on something, say, oh, I can't get rid of that, that's fine. Go on to the next thing. Because remember we said 80% of what we keep we never use anyway, and the more we keep, the less we use. So go through that office and say, does this help me accomplish my work and enjoy my life? And here's one very important thing. For every hour of organizing that you do, of clutter cleaning, allow 10 minutes for cleanup. So if you're in a storage room, for example, and you're cleaning up and you say, okay, I'm going to spend 2 hours in this storage room, you're going to find things in the storage room that need to go someplace else. Don't take them someplace else right then. Stay in the storage unit until you get that done, but then put in piles the things that need to go someplace else, and then for every hour, there's 10 minutes of getting those things where they need to be, and that will keep you from getting distracted.
Oh, that's great. I use baskets. I'm a basket person, so I when I'm cleaning up, I'll label baskets. Okay, whatever, this basket all goes to such and such a room, and this basket goes to the kitchen, or this basket goes, you know,
perfect,
somewhere else. And I think I actually learned that from you on one of our original calls a few years ago, and I have adhered to that practice ever since. So I don't leave the room I'm cleaning because we're easily distracted by shiny objects.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And we do that all the time. We'll start cleaning up one thing. We'll go to another room. So this is what I used to do. I'd start cleaning one room, find something that needs to be in another room. I'd go there, and then I'd start tearing that apart. And the next thing I knew, there's four rooms totally torn apart, and nothing's put away. But, you know, I think I'm organizing.
Well, and you feel more discouraged. And one of the other principles that is in the book is that in every organizing process, things will feel worse before they feel better when you change. Example, I'm working with a physical therapist right now because I'm having trouble with my hip, and she's teaching me to walk and sit differently. Well, that means I have to train other muscles that weren't being used before, and those other muscles hurt. Well, it's the same thing. In order for me to change the way I'm doing it, I've got to go through some pain. It's the same with that. But if you stay focused, and don't try to do all things at once. It's just like every business principle. You cannot do everything at once. You pick one thing and stick with that. You get successful with it. That gives you encouragement that you're able to do it, and then you move on to the next.
Excellent. So give us a website that people can find you, Barbara.
Just go to BarbaraHemphill.com or ProductiveEnvironment.com. Both of those websites will thank you to me. And the new book, LessCluttermoreLife.com, also talks just about the book, the LessCluttermoreLife.com. And that will give you some of those principles, you can see some of those principles, which are in fact the most important thing. Because what, in order to, for you to have the life you want, you have to get rid of the things that you don't, that don't help you accomplish your work and enjoy your life. And that's what that's about.
And Barbara has been kind enough to donate to our program here a number of her articles, which I will be publishing and providing. So, well, Barbara, this is a perfect timing to be interviewing you. I really appreciate it. You always come up with amazing tips, and I love your stories, and I think everybody can relate to this. And I as a homework assignment, I would like for you to please make sure you listen to the that you read the transcript of this, listen to this program several times, maybe even have your staff listen to it so that everybody could start, you know, once a month, a two-hour, I love this, you know, once a month thing. And the trash to treasure thing, I think, is a really important concept that we could all use, because there is somebody who will treasure stuff that we have no use for, that is for sure. So, Barbara, thank you so much for your time. We are most grateful.
Thank you, Lee, for having me. I always enjoy talking to you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
And we appreciate your knowledge. So, folks, you may want to give Barbara's business a call to maybe step in and help you. I know she always helps me in the calls, but I can't imagine what she would be like with real people on site. It must be, like, amazing. So this is a wrap. Talk to you next month. This is Lee Miltier signing off. Thanks again. Bye-bye.